Glad that we're praying. I hope you don't think those little prayer topics are fill-ins. They're not. They really are meant to focus us as a church body, as a church family, to focus on kind of our three initiatives. You know, and all is flowing out of our vision for the year, which is the deep end. And so I hope you'll continue to join us in those things. So as I was thinking about this morning, I was thinking we're going to be looking at Paul's words in chapter 3, and he talks about foundations. And for some reason, I was thinking jelly beans. I don't know why that is. I'm weird that way in some ways. Who likes jelly beans? Some of us do. Like, I like jelly beans. It's like anything that has that consistency, you know, like that fake gelatin. You know, the only thing that's in nature that's like that is they're mushrooms and, like, dirt. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, there's nothing really that exists that's good about jelly beans. But I like jelly beans, especially Jelly Bellies. Anybody have a favorite flavor? Like, you thinking of your favorite flavor right now? Like, I've got mine. I won't tell you mine. So you're just going to have to ask later, which I probably won't tell you anyway. But there's a game. Anybody heard of the game called Bean? Is it Bean Boozled? Oh, gosh. Right? Yeah, so there's that game. And so it's a game for gluttons for punishment. And the idea is, you know, like, if you've ever grabbed, like, a mixed bag of Jelly Bellies, like, there's a flavor in there that you don't like, and you just kind of absolutely grab the bag, and you're chewing. Like, for me, I will tell you the one I don't like. It's the popcorn flavor one. Like, I like popcorn, but not in a jelly bean form, right? And so this game, Bean Boozled, is kind of the idea. It's all the gross flavors, or actually, it's even grosser flavors of jelly beans. Like, there's grass, throw up, what are some others? Dog, yeah, I don't know dog stuff. How do you know what that tastes like? But you get the thing, right? And so here's the deal. And so here's what it is. It's Russian roulette with jelly beans. That's the easiest way to describe it. And there's like one space on the little spin card that has something decent. All the other spaces are like really, really bad. And so for some reason, we decided to play this as a family while we were in, visiting family in Tennessee. And let's just say it's like you're going to pay when you play, right? I mean, like, there's nobody's escaping it. Everybody's watching you chew stuff that's really gross, and you want to spit it out, and you can't, and it's really that kind of thing. And I remember I was like, at one point, like, the grass-flavored one was like, I was like, oh, I'm safe. I just have to chew grass like a cow, right? You know what I mean? And then someone hit, and then my brother, and so me and my brother, like, he's 7 years younger than I am, and we used to play video games together. Actually, we just started playing video games together again over this thing called the internet, right? And I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's this thing where you can connect people over large swaths of distances. Anyway, and so we used to just rail on each other when we play video games, especially when we were playing against each other. And so, like, I got the grass one, and he was kind of making fun of me, and then he got the vomit one. And I just was like, just let him have it, right? Because that's what brothers do. You know, they hug, and then they give each other a hard time. Brothers got to hug. Anyway, for you Tommy Boy fans in the room. But anyway, but yeah, so I was thinking, like, that's kind of like, it's not a lot. It's fun to watch other people suffer. It's fun to watch other people play that game and lose. But if you think about it, like, our spiritual lives are much like that as well. Like, intentionally, like, just let me land the plane here. I promise I'll get there. But intentionally, like, you know you're going to choose something you don't want. But I think, and it's part of the fun, and see which one you get. But I think unintentionally we do that with our spiritual lives as well. Like, if we're not careful, sometimes we'll find our spiritual lives or our spiritual walks marked with things that we're chewing on that we don't really want to chew on. Right? Like, I mean, if you think about it, like, most, you know, like God says, like, he is the best in all things, but then we often settle for less than the best of things in our spiritual journey. You know, and so that's the thing. Like, what my hope for you, my hope for myself, is I don't want us all in our spiritual walks chewing on a bunch of nasty jelly beans. And I think that's what Paul is saying here this morning as well. And in continuing in his theme of intentionality in chapter 3, last week Travis taught us that we are God's workers, and Paul, being God's worker, is now turning his focus toward building upon the foundation of Jesus. That's important because the church at Corinth is struggling with its spiritual life. Like, they're chewing lots of nasty jelly beans right now. I mean, the whole book is all marked with that. You know, have a disunity between themselves. We've talked a lot about that. Who they followed, Paul, or Travis talked about that. I just called you Paul. You're welcome. Travis talked about that last week with Paul. Like, some follow Paul, some follow Apollos. and now how they are exercising their public beliefs. Because here's the thing, our walks aren't just, it's a two-part thing. It's the stuff that's intrinsic, the stuff that's inside of us that we all hold dear. But then there's also the public expression, the outward expression of what that looks like as well. That's where Paul's going to turn his focus for the next five verses. So chapter 3, starting in verse 10, I just want to read this over us, and then we'll get going. So Paul says in verse 10, according to the grace of God given to me. I love that. Like, according to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building upon it. Let each one take care how he builds upon it. For no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold and silver or precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. If the work that anyone has built on the foundation survives, he will receive a reward. Interesting. If anyone's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, but only as through fire. Paul is talking about foundations this morning. And here's the thing, foundations don't happen by accident. They don't happen by accident. They have to be made. Like, there are no foundations lying around in nature. If I was wanting to walk through the woods, back to the jelly beans, I'm sorry, but not really. But like, if I'm walking through the woods and wanted to find something that was similar to the consistency of a jelly bean, I could probably go grab a mushroom. All that's laying around somewhere, right? Although, you know, like, they're poisonous and they could kill you. But anyway, here's the thing. Foundations aren't lying around. Like, they have to be formed. They have to be made. And so here's the thing. Ready for this? Like, foundations are founded on a purpose. For a purpose. Get that? Like, they're founded on a purpose for a purpose. Foundations are also grounded. The more in contact with the ground they are, the more effective the foundation. So they're founded for a purpose, and that they're also grounded. They're founded and they're grounded. That's what Paul is trying to remind the church. Hey guys, like, there's this foundation that this thing was started on. You guys need to remind yourselves of that, because if you get away from being founded and grounded as a church, you're just going to fall over and tip over. That's the whole point of a foundation, is to hold the whole structure up that's above it. And in regards to the grounding piece, that's why the ground has to be as flat as possible. Like, one time I was trying to put some pavers down, and I didn't really flatten the ground really well, and so they were kind of wonky, you know, and so when you step, like, they would wobble and all that. Like, who's ever stepped on a paver or a rock that wasn't completely grounded? You're like, what? I mean, there's dirt there. I don't need sand. I don't need to level it out. Well, actually, you do, because it has to be level ground. The ground has to be as flat as possible to be able to support the structure above. The less flat it is, the less measure it is, the harder it is for it to do its job. And here's the thing, like, some of us know this. You know, if you're a handy person or you work in construction, I had a job as a painter in college, and, like, there are no straight lines in nature anywhere, especially a house. Like, especially a house. Like, Dee and I were hanging some stuff yesterday, and I had my little level out because I want to do it right, and, you know, and marked the wall and did all the things, and then got it level, and I was looking at it, and Dee's like, oh my gosh, I married you, I'm so sorry. You know, but, like, I'm looking at this picture we hung over the back door to our backyard, and I'm like, wait, that picture's level, that door frame is not. And, like, I could see it, you know, and it was just like 1 degree off, but you could see it when things don't line up. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to think about that all night while I go to sleep. You know what I mean? And so, like, every time I look at that, like, it says grateful above the door. I love, you know, it's like a nice little word you put above the door. Like, we're grateful. Yay. All I see now is the unlevel door frame. You know? I know it. I have to fix the door frame to make the picture work. I mean, come on, people. I mean, you know? But that's the thing. There's no straight lines in nature. You know, when I was painting in college, like, it was the don't paint a straight line, just follow the line that was already painted. Unfortunately, I think we do that a lot with our Christian walks. Instead of figuring out what the straight line is between where we are and where God wants us, We just follow the line that's already present. We just follow the line that's already present. So first, just a couple of things on the foundation piece. Foundation is effectively based on how grounded it is. It does not shift. And then second, what the foundation is made of, this is what Paul's saying, determines its strength. What it's made of determines its strength. It's the difference between sand versus rock. And yet Paul is saying, again, in verse 10, according to grace given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation. Someone's laid that foundation for us. So foundations don't just happen without intentionality. The church at Corinth wouldn't have the foundation of Jesus to come back to if Paul hadn't have laid it. Likewise, you and I, we wouldn't have the same as well. And so without intentionality, you're either careful or careless with the design of what you're building your life on. There's only two ways. Only two ways. You're either careful or careless if you have a foundation at all. See that? And so the foundation of our spiritual walk is the same. So, like, I think what Paul's saying through the text, at least to me this morning as I was working through, is like, hey, Tyler, like, what's your foundation made of? Is it made out of what you could do or what Jesus has done? So Paul is reminding the church at Corinth that foundations matter, and the Corinthian church is having all kinds of foundation trouble. And like, if you've ever been a home or bought a home or rented a home that had foundation troubles, there's cracks in the wall. Like, all the stuff that you see on the front end, it's always worse underneath. Right? Like, you get that? You know, like, if the window won't open properly, like, it's really bad underneath it, because that's just symptomatic of what's going on underneath. Verse 11, Paul addresses more directly in chapter 8, of 1 Corinthians, but he begins to preview the problem here in chapter 3, verse 11. And he says, let each one take care how he builds upon it, for no one can lay a foundation other than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. So here's the deal. The problem with the Corinthian church, there's lots of problems, but the big problem is something called syncretism. Syncretism, S-Y-N-C-R-E-tism. Syncretism. And the idea that what syncretism is where you start blending and melding religions and thought ideas together to make something new. We do this all the time, by the way. Like, in some ways, it's not a bad thing. Like, you take what, you know, for those of us that are my age or that we've exited the home, like, we took our parents' rhythms and practices, and then we've adopted them and kind of made them and take them around. That's syncretism, right? We take our parents' thoughts on something, we have our own thoughts, and then we find somewhere in the middle of that, right? With a vacation, like my vacation, I just like doing like the same stuff, like traditions. Like, we've always gone to this place. Let's go to that place. It's always a lot of fun. Somebody, you know, some people in our family likes to do new things. And so, like, well, how do you figure that out, right? And so that's syncretism. But in the case of the Corinthian church, they're blending religious systems and religious ideologies all in the one. And in the case of the Corinthian church, they're dealing with the Greek idea of called dualism. And so the thing that marked the Greek society is dualism. Corinth is located in Greece, hence Greek. The prevailing Greek thought on the day was dualism, where your body and your spirit were separate. Now think about that for just a second. You're like, well, wait a minute. What do you mean they're separate? Well, what happens in your body does not affect your spirit. And what happens in your spirit does not affect your body. Matter of fact, Greek thought is the world that can't be seen is the world that is holy. Everything that you can see is not. So there's no redemption in the world and at play. And so this has profound gospel implications for the church at Corinth. That's why they have temple prostitutes of both men and women at Corinth, and where what happens in the physical worship doesn't happen in your spiritual worship. And I was thinking through this, I was like, well, wait a minute, like, what I do matters through the week just as much as it matters on a Sunday, right? Like, if I'm trying to, like, you know, I'm in the ditch or whatever, I'm doing those, you know, things I don't want to do, which we all do, by the way, right? But if I'm working my way through the week and I'm like, oh, I got to get ready for Sunday, so let me kind of get out of where I am and get back on the path where I need to be. Like, that's syncretism. It matters. It matters. You know, and the idea is that syncretism co-opts and limits the gospel of Jesus and its holistic transforming effects. And we feel these pressures all the time. A modern day example of syncretism in Western Christianity is called moralistic therapeutic deism. You ever heard of that term? Moralistic therapeutic deism. It was all the rage back in the early aughts, like 03, 04. I'm just going to read you a couple of things on that. So here's some of the components of moralistic theistic deism, and I'll explain what I mean. One, moralistic means God wants us to behave and generally be good people to one another. Okay, that makes sense. That's good, right? Like, we should be nice to one another. We should play well in each other's sandboxes, all those things. Therapeutic, here's the thing. God only wants you and me to be happy. Only to be happy, not holy. There's a difference. Like, if I enter my marriage, that D's goal and my goal for D is to her to make me happy, I'm really putting a lot on her, something that she can't do. And then deism, God created the world, but he isn't involved in our lives every day. So here's some components in moralistic therapeutic deism. A belief in a God who remains distant from people's lives. That's one. Two, people are supposed to be good to each other, i.e. moral. I just said that. The universal purpose of life is being happy and feeling good about oneself. There are no absolute moral truths. God allows good people into heaven, and God places very limited demands on his people. I think that's the biggest for us today, that God would place only a very few things on us as followers of him. George Barna, who's one of this country's great researchers for the church, says practitioners in therapeutic deism are not anti-religion or anti-Christianity. They're just not willing to surrender themselves to the authentic Christianity's demands or to believe that a real faith would even make such demands of them. So it's not that when this creeps in, it's not that we are anti-God or anti-Jesus. It's just, well, wait a minute. Does Jesus really want me to do the things that I'm reading about in the scripture? Furthermore, as George Barna was researching, he said 91% of those that were surveyed said, do not believe that people are sinful and need salvation through Jesus. That's one. True, they trust sources other than the Bible for moral guidance. Let me just go social media, right? I'm just going to say it, right? Three, contend that good people get to heaven through good behavior. And then the final one is that do not believe that the Bible is true and reliable communication from God. That's 71%. 71%. So as you can see, like, we've all had those people in our lives that love Jesus but also want to be happy above all other things. You ever had someone, maybe that's been you at some point. Like, God, I'm following you. I'm living my life the way that you want me to live. Like, I'm treating people well. I'm staying in my lane. Like, I'll let you know when I need something from you. Just back away so that I could do my life. Thank you very much. And then don't understand why things aren't going well in my life because I'm following God and loving Jesus, at least in word. You ever experience that pressure? Like, wait a minute, like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I'm reading the scriptures, I'm praying, I'm in community. Like, I'm challenging myself to be more like Jesus, but yet my world's getting harder. It's not getting easier. I thought I was supposed to have an easy life following Jesus. An easy life. But wait a minute, God, I only need you when I need you. So just back away. But then this is how we get the prosperity gospel. If you do enough right things, you will have health and wealth. And if you don't have health and wealth, you are not doing enough right things. Notice the pressure of you are not doing enough right things. Things. You, not him, you. And it's a dangerous pattern that churches fall into and people fall into because the assumption is, wait, doing X gets you Y. Well, I mean, it's not formulaic like that. Like, that's not our walks. I call it the Pez dispenser gospel. Like, let me rub the God genie bottle for a second and give me, there's the candy reference. I'm sorry, I didn't even plan that, but give me my next piece of candy and leave me alone to my own devices. Like, can you just pop your head and let me have a piece of candy, please? Thanks. Like, I worshiped really hard this morning. Can I have my next piece of candy? Thanks. Like, here, let me go talk to someone I don't know. Like, help them feel well. Like, thanks. When It's about me doing the things that I want to do so that you will make me happy, God, as opposed to me doing the things that you've called me to do and asked me to do and are waiting for me to do. Not from a self-help, let me clean myself up, shine myself up so that I could get to heaven one day, because I'm supposed to reflect your glory. I'm supposed to reflect your glory. And then leave me alone. Just leave me alone and I'm good. Except, and I'll let you know when I need you, I'll call you on the bat phone. Thanks. Right? How many of us are walking walks like that at times of our lives, or maybe even right now? Maybe even right now. Paul's saying, hey, wait a minute. There's no other foundation than Jesus. It's not about your good works. It's not about your good deeds. It's about his sacrifice on your behalf to restore the relationship between you and the Father. Another big thing in syncretism, you see this all the time as well, it's big and ting in young adult culture right now, is relativism. Raise your hand if you've ever seen this hashtag. Be the change you want to see in the world. Anybody seen that one? Just three? Really? That's got to be more. Be the change you want to see in the world. Here's the thing about being the change you want to see in the world. It's determined by your truth preference, not Jesus Christ. If you want to say it another way, say it this way. Be the change that Jesus wants to see in the world. Take away the you and Jesus. That's what our culture needs. Not more us, not more you, not more I. This is what I want. This is what Jesus wants for the world. What Jesus wants for the world. And yet Paul says in verse 11, you cannot build your own life, your life on anything other than Jesus. Right? You build it on you. I could tell you, I know this because I do this, right? I think we all do it. Like, I am a very fickle God to myself, right? Like, I'm super gracious with other people, but very exacting with myself. It's a form of work. It's a form of works. Like, I have to work on that. I have to be careful about that. I have to be careful about those things. Another syncretism example that Tim Keller talks about in his podcast, Winning the West Again, which I cannot recommend more. You want to talk about what it looks like to be the church in modern Western culture, winning the West again because it's been won once, it's this idea of like seizing power in the public square so that I can accomplish what I want. Jesus never thought about seizing power, nor did he ever ask his followers to seize power. He asked them to remain and be in the world. We can't be and remain in the world if we only focus our energy here. That's why we're also focusing our energy out there, right? God calls us to be focused on biblical issues, but never asked us to seek any kind of power to accomplish his purposes. He doesn't ask us to do that. Matter of fact, our job is to engage the world critically, not withdrawing, but not making any one ideology its king. Because as soon as we assert something else's kingship over our lives, we've just taken Jesus off the throne. Here's what I love, we get to not withdraw, we get to connect and confront. And then the other thing is in that connecting and confronting with biblical things that I think Jesus is concerned about, we in turn get confronted as well. And then we get challenged. And then we get to say, well, wait, hold on, maybe I need to think about this for a second. Maybe I need to have my own thoughts as opposed to someone else's thoughts. And there's the difference between laying the foundation as opposed to walking someone else's path. If we would walk our paths with intentionality, we would be in a lot better place, I think. And yet Paul says in verse 11, you cannot build your life on anything other than Jesus Christ. No other ideology. None. Like, there's no gray area. There's no room. It's either him or not. And that's why syncretism is at work today as much as is at work in Corinth. And it's so subtle these days, especially when we're in a context where we have just about everything we want and we're mostly safe. Because when you have every desire and want checked and you're mostly safe, what do you need God for anymore? What do you need God for? Okay, God, I'm good. Thanks for that Pez candy, that jelly bean that doesn't taste like vomit, just slowly back away from me, and I'll let you know when I'm good. But then what happens when trouble comes, and suffering, and when you're without, or you have a health problem that's not being fixed, or a family issue that's not being restored, or you have conflict and tension, what's our natural tendency, right? It's to slowly back away. Well, hold on, let me withdraw, because I want God to withdraw. Let me withdraw, and then I'll come back in. When instead, he calls us to be intentional and actually press in. That's what's radical about Corinthians. Paul is pressing into the church that he started. He could just rip them a new one and start over, right? But no, he's actually pressing in relationship. Verse 12, two types of materials Christian build on the foundation of Jesus. There's perishable and imperishable. The perishable is the one he says second, wood, hay, and straw. In verse 12, he starts with the imperishable, the gold, the silver, the precious stones. So we're all living our life on the foundation of Jesus Christ. Now we have to build something. For those of you that are in the room, you're like, okay, yes, all right, here's my part of the sermon. I'm ready to go. Here we go. And so the question is what material are you going to use, perishable or imperishable? Perishable, the wood, the hay, and the straw, it's the easier spiritual work already on the surface and doesn't last. Think about that. Like if I'm just walking around, I'm back in the forest for some reason today, but if I'm walking around, I could find wood, hay, and straw just laying around. See that? Like that's easy. I could grab it. We could build on it. Okay. Works for a time, but it doesn't work. There's that show, what's it called, Alone, where they put all these people like on this island somewhere and they have to live by themselves for 100 days for like $1 million and nobody knows when the other people tap out. Have you seen this show? Like, it's a great show, right? It's like, I'd love to think I could make it like 50 days. I'm like, I'm probably done in 24. I mean, if I'm just being honest, you know, like I'm probably done soon because I'll go into Netflix withdrawals and Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, there's no nothing. Like, and so you see people, they mess up from the jump when they don't build something right from the start. And then they're having to chase everything. And so that's the thing. That's what Paul's saying. He's saying, hey, Christian, Corinthian church, don't build your church, don't build your lives on the things that are perishable, wood, hay, and straw. That stuff's already on the surface. It doesn't last. Rather, imperishable things, build them with imperishable things, gold, silver, precious stones. And that's the harder spiritual work because to get at those things, we got to bring them up from underneath the ground to the surface, through the surface. And gold, silver, and precious stones are around for eternity until they're not, right? Wood, hay, and straw gets burned up in the fire. We'll get there in just a minute. Gold, silver, and stones don't. They don't. And so if you and the Corinthian church is expecting to have a relationship with Jesus or build a ministry or a church without the effort about bringing things up to the surface. Like we all have things that are just underneath the surface. Do you know what the surface is called? Flesh. Flesh. We'll always default to the perishable materials because it's the path of least resistance. There is stuff right now that God is working in your life. I guarantee it. Like, I'm willing to bet everything that I have on it, lest he strike me down right now. Like, which he could. But I'm just saying, like, it might be my time, and if it's my time, it's my time. But there are things right now underneath the surface of each of us that God is trying to get you to bring up, trying to get you to bring up to the top, trying to get you to unearth it and bring it to the surface to build your life on something more than just the perishable stuff that's lying around. That's just lying around. He's trying to get the Corinthian church to do that too. And oftentimes, like, we don't even think about it. It's like, no, I mean, I've got that wound or I've got that hurt or that happened at one point in my life and that really damaged me. And so I'm just going to leave it there and I'm just going to, God, will you please make me happy because I was really hurt and that thing disappointed me. And I just want to ignore that so that I could just focus on the happiness I could have now. You'll never, ever be happy. Like, we'll never have happiness if we ignore all those things. And we all have them. And yet God in his grace is saying, let Jesus died for all that. Let him bring this stuff up to the surface. And yet we see it and we're like, hold on. And then we just push it back down. We push it back down. And so the reality of it is, it's like the path of least resistance is the path already traveled. And then, like, I wonder why in the world do I have what I have in my walk at times because I'm just walking the same path I've always walked, expecting a different result. The Corinthian church is trying to live a life of two lives and they're expecting a different result, and they don't mix. It's like oil and water. And you know what the definition of doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting something different is, don't you? Insanity. It's called craziness. That's right. It is, right? But yet we do that all the time because it's the path of least resistance. God is not calling you to live a path of least resistance. He's not. He's not. We are leaving the best materials under the surface, our flesh, which is the greatest barrier to be what God has deposited in each of us. You have that stuff sitting right now in your spirit, in your soul, ready to be unearthed. And the question for you this morning is, will you let God do what God does to bring that stuff up? And it's worth way more than gold and silver, than stones, or whatever it is that we hold our life to the most dear. As long as I'm good here, and we all do it, as long as I'm good here, I'm okay. And then what happens when that thing goes sideways? That thing goes sideways. Proverbs 18:4 says this. Love these two verses in Proverbs. 18:4 says this. The words of a man's mouth, we'll say people there because it's talking to all of us in the room. The words of people's mouths are deep waters. The fountain of wisdom is a bubbling brook. Do you know that? Like, you and I have the ability to have deep waters come out of our mouths at all times. Deep water. Deep water. You want to pour gas on something? Don't think of yourself that way. You want to put water on fires, which is, I think, what we're called to do? Look at yourself as deep water. Not because of who you are, because, like, I know me. Like, it's not me. Like, I wish it was me. I'd be great. Like, I'd be way more conceited if I thought it was me. Sorry about that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it would be me. It's not. It's Jesus. It's Jesus. The mouth is like deep water. And then chapter 20, verse 5 says this. The purpose, I love this. Don't miss this morning. The purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Draw it out. Be a person of deep water. Be a person of understanding. That's what Paul's saying to the church in Corinth. A person of understanding is like deep water being drawn out. Let God draw out the deep things that He is placing you. That stuff that you think you'll never get to. That stuff you think that'll never work. That stuff that you think will actually be fleeting. It is the deep drink of water offered in Jesus. Not the imperishable, not the perishable things of this world. We have choices every single day to say yes to the world or yes to Jesus. And Paul is saying, be like deep water, drawing yourself out. Because the core value of one of our core values is here at Crossroads is growth in the gospel, because healthy things grow. And how we grow in the gospel is allowing in relationship, in conversation, in relationship with Him and with each other, bringing these things up to the surface and shining the light of the gospel on it. That's where the rubber meets the road. Am I willing and risky enough to allow someone to shine a light into the cobweb corners of my spirit and my soul? Or do I keep people at an arm's reach because I don't want the light to shine? And the whole time we're like, God, the Spirit is just saying, bring it up. Just let it be. Just let it come up. Can't grow in the gospel unless we allow God through the Spirit, the Word, the confession, and others to help draw out the deep water in us. And so if you're not in the Word, if we need to be more in the Word or in prayer, in confession, in relationship, that's how this stuff gets drawn out. It is the bucket and the rope to the wellspring of our soul. See that? Spirit in the world. And here's the difference. Let me give you this example. It's the difference between drinking Pantego water versus fresh snow melt. You ever tasted the difference? You ever had fresh snow melt at 14,000 feet or at 10,000 feet or wherever, like fresh snowfall? We just had a chance to do this a couple weeks ago, right? Like, have you ever tasted fresh snow and then drink Pantego water? I don't mind Pantego water. It's better than iodine tablets, but I'm just saying. But here's the deal. We often choose junk water in our lives because, you ready?
because it is more readily available than the harder to get water. And churches do it all the time, and the Corinthian church is in a battle for its soul right now. Junk water. We choose Aquafina water as opposed to the good stuff. The good stuff. And so if you and I, if we're trying to build Crossroads or a ministry without doing the hard work, we're leaving the most precious resources covered up for those that don't last. It's the difference between pragmatism and being spirit-led. Okay? Pragmatism, it's like doing the thing that's in front of you. Okay, that makes sense, and it's fine, and it's good, as long as you're spirit-led, because it's not pragmatic that the Spirit placed that thing in front of you. But we all walk journeys and live lives in such a way, well, and that's the path of least resistance, let me go that way. Jesus never, ever walked and chose a path of least resistance. He didn't. He didn't. He went the hard way all the time. And he calls you and to me to go the hard way all the time, because doing the pragmatic when being spirit-led is good. But doing the pragmatic without consulting the Spirit or being in relationship with him is futile effort. That's syncretism. See it? See it? Don't live syncretistic lives. Don't live syncretistic lives. I don't even know if that's a word, but don't do it. Don't do it. Choose the good stuff. And it's up there, and it's in here, and he's wanting to bring it out. Verse 13. Each one. Let me read 13 again just real quick. We're almost done. Each one's work will become manifest, for the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. Each one, by the way, is a pretty easy translation, meaning everybody in this room and everybody that's read this book ever and who Paul's writing to. Everyone. It means all of us, right? All of our work, all of our building, whether we use perishable and imperishable, what foundation we're building upon, will all be disclosed or manifested, as the verse says, in the final day. Like in the final day, it will all be revealed. And here's what I love about that. It's scary as all get out to me when I think about the stuff that's going to be revealed and the stuff and the work that I've tried to do in his grace and mercy. But here's the one thing I appreciate about it. There will be no more nuance or gray areas. Like, that seems like freedom to me, y'all. In a world that is governed by nuance and gray, there will be no more nuance and gray. No more nuance and gray with ourselves, with the world, with our walks. And the last day is marked by fire. Fire does two things. You want to read about the fire of the last day? Just write this note down for you. It's 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 8. If you want to read that later, I'm not going to do it now. But here's two things that fire does, okay? We're close to the end. One, fire provides security and warmth. Provides security and warmth. Look at verse 14. It provides security and warmth. That's when fire is used appropriately. It provides security and warmth. Also, number two, fire consumes and destroys as well. Look at verse 15. If our work doesn't survive the last day, we'll be in the kingdom, but no reward will be given. But if our work does survive, we will be given a reward in addition to our salvation. Like, this isn't, and so, like, here's the thing that you know, Paul was talking about spiritual milk at the beginning of this chapter. The spiritual milk for infants is that we are all saved. That's the milk. The adult food, the steak, the chicken, all insert the whatever jelly bean preference you have, right? Like, all those things, that's the reward. God doesn't call us, and you're like, well, wait a minute, that's like, aren't you talking about workspace? No, I am not. Because it is only in the grace of Jesus Christ I do anything. I guarantee you. Like, I guarantee you, it is the reward. That's the stuff that Paul is calling the church at Corinth to, and Paul and the Holy Spirit is using this scripture to call us to. It's not just that we're saved and we're good. Now we're supposed to live and redeem and reflect his glory and his goodness. I'm going to bring the band back up. Because here's the deal. Fire provides security and warmth, or it consumes and destroys. And so Paul is saying, church, Corinth. Live, build your church. Don't meld the culture around it into the gospel, which makes no gospel at all. Stand firm on the foundation of Jesus, for Jesus, by Jesus, through Jesus. That's what Paul is calling the Corinthian church to. And so I'm pretty sure, as we close here this morning, that no one would say no to a reward on the final day. Like, if we had a choice, you would say yes or no. Who would say no? I wouldn't. Like, heck yeah. Like, don't you know what all I did for you, God? Like, give it to me. Let's go. I love Christmas. Here we go. Christmas for all eternity, right? No one would say no. But yet we have daily chances to say yes or no all the time. Right? And as the church, the believers, to build on the foundation of Jesus and His good news. And so my question to you is this morning. What kind of material are you building or using to build on? And what's your foundation? Because if it's anything less than Jesus, it is less. And if it's something that's wood, hay, or straw, or the easy things, like, the time is to move away from the easy. It's not easy anymore. Have you noticed the world's gotten harder? Like, everything's hard? There's a reason. Because I think too long we've sat back and walked the usual path, and we've neglected our opportunity to reflect His grace and glory in the world. So are we going to continue to do so, or are we going to do something different? 1 Peter 2:9 says this, "You and I are a royal priesthood, a holy nation for His own possession." So is your life marked by the possession of your life, or is your life marked by Jesus' possession of you? That's the question. And here's the thing, we get to proclaim the excellencies. I love that. His excellence, not mine. Not my shortcomings, not my failures, not when I get it 60% right. His excellence of Him calling us into the light. So are you proclaiming His excellencies this morning? What's your foundation? What's your material? And then what are you saying about His excellence? Will you bow your heads and pray with me? Lord, as we just sing and respond, I'm thankful that that we don't have to get it all right, that we don't have to be perfect, that we don't have to live our life in such a way in jeopardy of not being counted in Your number. But Lord, we do get the opportunity to live in such a way, Lord, that is proclaiming Your excellencies as You have called us out of darkness. And so I pray, Lord, just for myself, for my friends here this morning, for our church, Lord, for the church in America, the church in Pantego and Arlington and Texas, Lord, that we've got lots of things we could be divided on, but we could be united under one thing, and that's You, Jesus. Let us live a life that is bringing the things up from underneath the surface. Let us build on Your foundation, Jesus, with the gold and the silver and the stones that You have deposited into each of us. And it just breaks my brain that we can, one, just live in grace and mercy in Your sacrifice, but two, we get to co-labor with You, and that You have put that kind of material in me. And it's not because I'm standing here or talking this morning, it's because I am counted in Your number. We all have it. So as we sing and respond, Lord, let us have a singular focus and a singular